Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Lakeland coach questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek Coach Bruton's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about that impressive victory over Concordia last week and what he's expecting against Rockford this week. He discusses the improved performance of his team's defense last weekend. And the coach provides a detailed strategy on how you get the most candy on Halloween night. So let's join Muskies Matters.
Well, let's welcome back Coach Bruton. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
Just coming off a big homecoming win. You know, anytime you can win at homecoming, it's exciting. We, you know, took back the cheese ball, which was exciting, and a big win against Concordia. Obviously, it's nice having some momentum now in conference play. And heading into Rockford, it's another week. It's another week of focus for us, and it's kind of another elimination game. So we're looking forward to the challenge.
Well, let's talk about that week, that victory last week. Your thoughts on the contest?
Yeah, I thought we came out with great energy and great focus. That was the biggest thing that we lacked the week before, and we were ready to play. I mean, we were ready to play right from the start. And obviously, we caught some breaks. You know, they fumbled, and we forced 5 fumbles in the first 13 plays for their offense. And I've never seen anything like it. And it was one of those things that kind of snowballed on them a little bit, and you know, gave us all the momentum, gave us some short fields, and we were able to jump ahead. And the weather was a factor. It was incredibly windy. We were fortunate to be able to kick off with the wind to start the game. You know, the coin toss sometimes doesn't seem that important, but in a game like that where there's that much wind and kind of weather, it becomes a huge factor. And being able to kick off with the wind and have that in the first quarter was big. It allowed us to jump up and get some momentum. And I thought we played really well, both sides of the ball. I thought we had contributions from a lot of different guys, and it was an exciting win.
Your defense forces 5 turnovers in their first 6 possessions. I know that's how you drew it up.
Yeah, I was joking with our defense on the sideline. Just said, just keep forcing a fumble every second play, and we'll be in pretty good shape. But yeah, it was one of those crazy games. You know, I think you know, we forced a fumble the second play. They kind of had a bad mesh. We really didn't do much to force it, and we recovered it. And then we scored 2 plays later. We had a guy do a really nice job stripping the ball, and we scored. And then they got the ball back. And the first play, we had a big hit, and they fumbled. And I think sometimes when you're on the other side of it, you start trying to grip the ball maybe a little too hard. You start thinking about it, and or you're trying too hard to make a play. And you know, they fumbled 5 times, and we recovered all 5 of them, which isn't very common either. You know, looking ahead to Rockford, you know, last year against them, we forced 6 fumbles and did not recover 1. You know, so usually they talk fumble math, and usually recover about 50%. And it was one of those crazy games where we recovered, you know, 100% of the fumbles. So it's probably not something that's sustainable going forward, but we'll certainly try.
I wanted to ask you, on the sidelines, when it is short possessions for opponents because your defense is constantly forcing turnovers over and over again, what is the sideline like when that's going on?
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, our guys were into it. They were, you know, it's when you're making kind of big plays and momentum plays over and over again, it's exciting. And I thought our guys were really locked in, and they were excited. And you see the confidence and just the level of emotion was really high throughout. And, you know, and the hard part is then sustaining that for 60 minutes. You know, when you have so many highs really early, it's hard sometimes to sustain it. I thought we did a pretty good job of just sustaining it throughout. But yeah, it was exciting. You know, I think coming out and being excited, we came out. You could tell just in warm-ups in the locker room, we were ready to play. There was a level of emotion, a level of focus we hadn't had in other weeks. And then to see it then on the field was really good.
McNeiman Vincent had a huge day on defense for you, 2 sacks, a forced fumble, 2 fumble recoveries. The entire defense was outstanding, but it looked like he clearly set the tone early on.
Yeah, he's a really natural pass rusher, and you know, he plays really hard, and those are 2 really good qualities to have in the defense end. And I thought he did a great job setting the tone. He recovered the first fumble, and then a couple plays later, he was the guy that really ripped the ball out and recovered. And those 2 turnovers were the key to the game. You know, obviously the other 3 happened after that, but those 2 set the tone right away and set up 2 really short fields for our offense. He was great. He's been a really good player for us, and just starting to play. You know, I thought the really nice impressive thing with him was that he played really hard on Saturday. In all fast, you know, was kind of all over the place, was chasing plays down from the backside, was, you know, pressuring the quarterback. You know, he had the 2 sacks, but he had 2 other quarterback hurries in the game as well. And He's a really, really good football player, you know, and it was good to see him have such a huge day, and then to see him get honored. He was the conference player of the week this week on defense, which was cool to see him get honored because it was well-deserved.
You get 100-yard rushing games out of both Larry Rivers and Eddie Desmond. You know, a lot of coaches are happy with one great back. You get to have two.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good problem to have. You know, trying to balance carries with those two guys, and it was kind of Larry early, and it was Des a little bit later in the game, but they're both so dynamic. I thought Des Eddie was awesome throughout. He caught the ball, had some receptions. I think he scored three times, but he was really good, and obviously Larry is kind of the guy who set the tone for us offensively, and they make us look good. You know, when you go back and watch the film sometimes, you see even how special those guys are, because we weren't perfect up front. You know, there were some times that they just made things happen just by being, you know, the best two players on the field. It's a really nice problem to have when your biggest concern is how do we balance carries between the two, how do we get them enough touches, how do we find ways to get these two guys the ball, and they're special. You know, I think saw the stats that came out. You know, we have in school history, we've been playing football here for about 70 years. They're the two teammates that have the most career yards at the same time. You know, and I think they both have a shot to set the school record for career rushing. And if Dev sets it this year, I think Larry's going to catch him at some point real soon, or Larry might be the one to catch it. But they're both going to finish the year, top probably five at a minimum in career rushing. And you know, Larry's got a chance to set the school single season record with the pace he's on right now. And as I've said for many weeks, it wouldn't shock me if Dez all of a sudden exploded and had a stretch where he's now challenging that record because he's that talented. So they're damn good. They make us look good. They make us look like good coaches. And you know, it's just fun knowing you have two guys that can constantly move the chains, but they can constantly hit the big ones. And that's going to happen more and more as we go on.
Tez is 17 out of 23 for 213 yards for you. How did you feel? I mean, how do you rate his development at this point?
Yeah, you know, there's been some improvements. You know, I thought he made the big throw for a touchdown on one of the early series. You know, 73-yard touchdown, and made a great read on the throw. Still turned the ball over too much for my liking. You know, he had another fumble. Had the two picks, which are things that we can improve. So we're seeing improvement. I think there's still another step for him, another jump for him. And that's the exciting part about it, is that we're seeing these gradual improvements. As a coach, I think you always want to see it happen a little bit faster. But I thought he played better than he played the week before, and that was exciting. And, you know, he's going to continue to play better. Sometimes I think like I said, we want it to all happen at once, and it's not the way it works. It's more of a gradual development. But he's making strides as a leader, making strides just seeing things. Making strides with his fundamentals as far as throwing the football. You see that with the accuracy. You know, I think he's leading the conference right now in completion percentage, which is a really good stat for us. It means we're being efficient. It means we're keeping positive plays happening. And that's a big thing for us. So he's getting there. I think there's still a ways to go, especially with the turnovers. But I think we're seeing improvement.
How important is it for you to get that first win out of the conference win out of the way?
Yeah, it's important. You know, I think as important as getting the first conference win, it's not getting the second conference loss. You know, the second conference loss at this point is probably the eliminator. So like we've told our guys, you know, we get a chance to play an elimination game kind of every week. It's kind of like our playoffs started in week five this year instead of in week 11. So it's important. You know, I think it helps us gain some confidence and kind of changes the trajectory of the season. You know, if you all of a sudden lose that one and you're 1-4, you're 0-2 in the league, you know, you wonder what the motivation becomes and what the focus becomes and that kind of stuff. And our guys know now that, hey, we're playing Rockford and you know, it's a tricky game down there. You know, they're the only team that plays on grass in our league, so it's the only time our guys are playing grass really for about 3 years. It's the first grass game we played. And, you know, that makes it tricky. They do some good things on both sides of the ball, and they're physical, and so that makes it kind of a tricky trip and a road trip. And, you know, it brings a level of focus to this game that if you're 0-2 in the league, maybe you don't have. So it's another big one. But, yeah, I think getting the first one's important, and now you got to see if you can string them together.
Your players of the game?
Yeah. We'll start with special teams. You know, Andrew Cowley made his first career field goal, and that was exciting. It was a 39-yarder, which was a really nice kick. And, you know, as I've talked about many times, we've struggled in the kicking game now for a couple years. I think it was the first field goal we've made as a program in about 20-plus games. And part of that's, you know, I like to be aggressive, and we go for it a lot more on fourth down than a lot of other teams. But a part of it has just been, you know, confidence in our kicking game. And seeing him make one of those was big. And he also had 5 touchbacks in the game and did a good job kicking off. So Andrew Collins, our specialties unit, was outstanding. Defensively, you know, McNeiman, we talked about, had a huge game, was conference player of the week. And offensively, it was Dev Eddy. Scored 3 times and really was just special. You know, he did some things, and it was like a highlight film of just jump cuts and kind of making defenders look bad. And it was one of those games where he really barely got tackled. You know, he went out of bounds some and scored some, but it seemed like every touch they really weren't tackling him. He was kind of, you know, bouncing out of bounds, or he was getting in the end zone. So those 3 guys are outstanding. We had a number of other performances that were really good, but those 3 stood out.
This weekend you take on Rockford. They've lost 4 in a row at this point. Your keys to this contest?
Yeah, I think, you know, it starts off with us. It starts off with just our focus, the energy we can bring. Going down there, you know, they're not going to have a huge crowd. They usually don't draw great, and it's not always a great environment down there. You know, so for us, it's bringing our own energy and making sure that our energy travels on the bus with us. So I think that's the first key. Then when you get into the X's and O's, you know, I think they try to play the game kind of as a grind. They're going to try to play kind of a slower paced game. They're going to try to run the ball. They got a good offensive line. They got a back that's really physical. Then they have a quarterback that, you know, last year kind of a career game against us. He threw 4 touchdowns against us, and he's a good player. He's a really accurate passer, and they got 2 receivers on the outside that I really like that I think are really good players. And you know, so for us, it's bringing energy. It's controlling the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. You know, we're going to have to run the ball. We did not run the ball at all against them last year when they beat us, and they ran the ball pretty successfully. So it's those things. It's kind of the basic football stuff you talk about as a coach. It's coming out ready to play, and then it's controlling the line of scrimmage. And then for us, I think it's a little bit of just being patient. You know, I think because of the style they want to play, it's going to be a slower paced game. You know, not getting impatient if it doesn't happen right away for us, but just knowing that it's going to be kind of a fight. It's going to be a 60-minute fight, and we're going to make plays as the game goes on if we don't get impatient.
Rockford has 2 sacks and 3 interceptions this season. I know you want to establish the running game, especially with the guys that you have back there. But with kind of looking ahead to Aurora and Benedictine, do you feel like you have to start trying some things in your passing game just to prep for those games, those big games later on?
You know, we're not looking ahead really to that. You know, we know what could potentially be down the road, but it's all about Rockford this week. Like I said, it's an elimination game for us, and you know, we're going to game plan to beat Rockford, not to prepare for Benedictine or Aurora somewhere down the line. And, you know, I think, you know, Rockford plays the style defensively. They don't pressure a ton. They're more, a little bit more conservative defensively. So a lot of times it's a 3-man rush. They do some things just trying to keep the ball in front of them. And, you know, they got a linebacker that's leading the nation in tackles right now. You know, so he's a really good player. They got a really good safety that was an all-region kid last year. So they have some good players on that side of the ball. I think for us, you know, it always starts from establishing the run, and that's kind of the strength of our offense, and that's not going to change. But when there's opportunities to throw the ball, you know, we need to be a little more balanced and make some big plays in the passing game, and I think we have the ability to do that. So it'll be a mix. You know, I don't know that we're necessarily looking to do something because of what may be down the line, though. It's a focus on Rockford, and what's the best plan to beat Rockford on Saturday.
Well, let's jump into fan questions, and we start with Phil, who starts out with Coach B. When you dominate a game like that early on, is it hard to keep guys as mentally sharp when you get so far ahead early on?
It can be. You know, I think with everything going on Saturday with homecoming and the Cheese Bowl and that, there was a level of focus that was probably different than a lot of other games for us. But it can be. You know, I think we talked before the game, and really my message to the team was 60 minutes. You know, we really thought that game on Saturday was going to be kind of a 60-minute battle back and forth, and it didn't turn out that way, which was fortunate for us. But really we're focused on, hey, 60 minutes and every play being important, and that was kind of our message throughout the week. And I thought our guys did a really good job on Saturday of kind of staying focused and that. And you know, defensively, quite honestly, the shutout became important to us as the game went on. You know, we played some younger guys or some subs later in the game, and it was really important for me and for our guys to maintain the shutout. It's been a while since we shut an opponent out, and I think anytime you can do that, you want to. You know, so it became that kind of became a focus for us and said, hey, once we kind of saw that, you know, the win was going to happen, now can we keep the shutout? Can we keep doing some things like that? And I think offensively it was the same focus. You know, can we continue to move the chains? Can we continue to run the ball with some other guys in the backfield? Can we have some success throwing the ball and continue to move the chains and just be efficient, you know, as we're playing some younger guys? So the focus, I think, changes a little bit, and I think there's been some games where we haven't done as good a job with maintaining that mental edge as the game went on.
Phil would also like to know, is there a point total where you take your foot off the gas out of respect for the other team?
Yeah, I don't think there's a specific point total. It's more time and score dependent. It's more opponent dependent. It's kind of a feel for your team and what else you need to work on. You know, we always say that at a very minimum, through the first half, we're going to play it as we normally would. And then generally, we want to start the third quarter with our starters and give them at least a series. You know, there was a conference game a couple years ago. We led 50-0 at the half. And I don't know if the opposing coaches were very happy because we went in a 2-minute drill right before the half, you know, up 43-0 to put another score on the board. And but to me, you know, if it's in the first half, there's really no hard feelings that can be had if you're playing hard in the first half. And then after that, you're going to look and see, okay, when does it make sense for us to get our guys out? And some of it, you know, like I said, depends on time and score. Obviously, on Saturday, we were up early, you know, but it never really felt in the first half by any means, and even into the third quarter, that game was necessarily over. You know, we were still having to make stops. We were still having to score, and you don't want to give a team momentum and make it dangerous as it goes on. So it's really time and score dependent. It depends on who the opponent is. Depends on, you know, what point of the season it is, you know, how important is it to get your guys out and maybe get them more rest versus experience and things like that. So it's really no number. I saw there was a couple of games this weekend where teams won 90-0. I think there was a D3 game that was 90-0. There was an NAIA game that was 90-0. You know, we don't ever want to get to that point. But at the same time, you're not going to stop calling offense. You're not going to stop running plays you know, if the other team's throwing the ball and your kid picks it off, you're not telling them to take a knee and things like that. So sometimes it's when scores get like that, it's not necessarily the winning coach's fault. It can sometimes be the losing coach's fault by not taking his foot off the gas and still trying to score and things like that.
Frank would like to know if this was the best defensive performance your team has played for you in your time at Lakeland.
No, it's not. It was really good, but it wasn't the best. We had a couple weeks in 2014 was probably the best defense we've had. We had you know, multiple weeks where we held teams under 100 yards of total offense, and you know, we played WLC in 2014. I think through three quarters they had about 20 yards of offense, and we had a game in 2008, one of my early years here at Lakeland, when we played Concordia for the Cheese Bowl and held them to about 110 yards and shut them out. So it's been better. This was really good, but you're kind of nitpicking when you get to that point. It wasn't the best. I don't want to disrespect the guys that played before and some of those great performances. It wasn't the best, but it was very good.
Mark says, who do you think will be the guy you prepare to take over for Larry Rivers when he graduates?
Yeah, it's a tough question. You know, we're that's kind of a something we don't want to think about right now, is not having Larry Rivers in the offense, and we got him for another year, which is great. You know, we have three freshman backs that are all getting better. You know, Q and Zoe are, you know, freshman backs, and then Bryce Moore has been kind of the leader of that pack, and he did a nice job running the ball, but on Saturday when he got in, those three guys are all doing a nice job. They're getting better. You know, so those guys are going to be in the mix, and then you don't know who's going to be on your roster in 2 years. You know, it's, you're looking at 2021, and you don't know. You know, you don't know which of those three guys are going to develop, and you don't know who you're going to bring in with recruiting and things like that. So it's not a problem I really want to worry about right now, because you know, thinking about an offense without Larry doesn't make me very happy. But we'll find somebody. You know, we've had a really good tradition of having really good backs, and you know, it's been Larry, it's been Daz, and you know, it's Adam Meeks, and we've had some other ones down the line, Kendrick Burks and some of those guys. We've always been able to find running backs, so feel confident we'll find somebody and figure it out.
Isn't Larry signed to a 10-year deal or something? I thought he was going to be
right. I wish it worked that way. Yeah, we'll throw him some more meals in the cafeteria or something like that, or some more gear. We'll see if we can keep him a while longer.
Tom says, Coach, the penalties are mounting. What do you do to fix that?
It's a concern. We're talking with our guys constantly. We're talking about discipline. I think we've done a good job of curbing the offside penalty. I think we had six or seven of them week one against Carroll, and I think we've had one the last 4 weeks combined. So that's been really good. We've done some good things with that. But yeah, it's the big penalties, it's the holding penalties we've had offensively, and a lot of it's just technique driven. It's not moving the feet, it's not it's not playing in the framework, and some of that stuff. So some of it's technique driven, we're working technique. Some of it is just being more disciplined, and that's been a big focus this week. It's just playing with more discipline, trying to become a more disciplined football team. We're not there yet, but they've been killers at times. They killed us. Obviously, we talked a couple weeks ago. They were really killers against Concordia, Chicago, and this week we had some holding penalties. I think we had a 1st and 30 at one point with some penalties, and it's been too much. And we got to fix them, and we're trying to be more disciplined. And there's a certain amount of penalties that when you're being aggressive, you can understand a little bit, and there's a certain point that they're just undisciplined penalties, and those are the ones that we're really trying to get out of the game.
Zeke says, I remember the team did some kind of kid thing for Halloween a few years ago. Is that still going on this season?
Yeah, we're heading out actually tomorrow to Lincoln Urban Elementary. They do a Halloween night, and our guys will be in their jerseys, and they'll go out and play games with the kids. It's a really good event. It's a good turnout. Our guys really enjoy it. Probably the favorite part is there's what they call the candy walk, where the kids walk around kind of this path, and a little bit of a wooded path, and it started out with the kids going, and there's like 4 or 5 stops along the path where they would just get candy. And over the years, it's become now a haunted candy walk where our guys are jumping out of bushes and scaring second graders. So far, we haven't had any complaints. That's good. The kids seem to like it. None of them have gotten too scared, but it's kind of the highlight for our guys. Our guys are all kind of pushing to be the guys inside of the candy walk instead of being the guys inside running the game. So it's a fun night. It's a fun night for the kids, and our guys are looking forward to it.
That's what Halloween's all about. That's what we're talking about. Bruce would like to know, what is the right percentage you believe an offense should have between run and pass plays?
I don't think there's a right number. I think it depends on your efficiency. There's teams that run the ball 90% of the time. There's teams that throw it 90% of the time. I always look and say, it's all about efficiency and it's about production. If you can run the ball 80 plays in a row and gain 7 yards of rush, you should be doing that, and vice versa. I think sometimes coordinators or offenses or announcers or whoever it is think you have to strike this balance. And sometimes balance is dumb when you're talking about, hey, we want to be 50-50 run to pass. If you're throwing the ball at a high success rate and you're not running the ball successfully, why are you running the ball? It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. So I think you see the good offenses can change. I mean, multiple, I think you talked about, the Patriots will come out and there's games they may run it, 60% of the time, and the next game they may throw the first 20 plays of the game, because that's the matchup that they like. And I think that's where you want to be. You want to be more efficient offensively, and if you can do that, you'll have success.
Next up is Calvin, who says, I watch a lot of football, and it looks like illegal contact and holding are on every play. How do you handle games when games are called, when some things get chosen, but other penalties are not? What do you do about that?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot you can do. You try to talk to your guys that it's being called a certain way, but there's not a whole lot you can do. We're fortunate that the illegal contact doesn't exist in college, because our guys are pretty aggressive in the secondary, and we can get handsy at times. But it's not fun watching NFL games when every time there's an incomplete pass, now everybody turns to look and see if there's a flag. And it's not just the illegal contact; it's the defensive holdings, it's the pass interference. It's kind of gotten out of control. And doesn't make it for a very fun watch, but you just try to adjust. I think the players are smart enough to adjust and understand how the game's being called. And it's tough, though. If you get into a game and all of a sudden you feel like, the Concordia-Chicago game, we were called for 6 holding penalties. And going back and watching the film, maybe 3 of them were true holds. We felt like there was some holds that they called on our receivers that were pretty poor calls. But you just have to try to adjust. There's not a whole lot you can do except try to adjust what you're doing and just kind of understand this is the way the game's being called.
Dave says, this is something I hear in games all the time. A ref will make a bad call for one team and then make one for the other, and the announcer will say, that was a makeup call. Does that really happen? And if so, does it really make up for the earlier call?
It happens. Yeah, it happens. I think you'll see it where refs know they made a bad one. And they generally know that, hey, this was a questionable one, and they'll try to make one maybe that's questionable on the other end, try to balance it out. Generally penalties are going to balance out, that you're going to be usually within a couple penalties. But I think they try to, especially when they know they've made maybe one that was questionable, they'll try to balance it out a little bit. And it doesn't necessarily make up for it, I think it's probably the best they can do in the moment to try to make it right. So you'll see it happen. You'll see, if we get called for a holding penalty on one end, the other team's more likely to get called for a hold on their offense next possession. Just kind of the way it works, it seems. And you don't always like it as coaches, but it's just kind of the way it is.
James says, what is turf toe? I heard this really doesn't have anything to do with your toe.
It does have something to do with the toe. It's a sprained ligament in the toe. And I only know that because about 20 minutes ago, me and Coach Tretzky had a conversation about turf toe because I didn't really know what it was either. And you hear it all the time. I know the Packers with Devontae Adams got turf toe right now, and he's going to be out, or it's been out for a couple weeks. And I was with James here. I had no idea until a short while ago, until this morning, and we had a discussion about it. But yeah, it's supposed to be really painful. So I think growing up, I thought you could only get turf toe on turf. So I didn't really know what exactly it was, but it's just a sprained ligament in the toe, and from what I've been told, it's extremely painful and really tough to play through.
Ryan would like to know, what happened to toilet paper in people's houses?
I think kids are getting lazy. That's what it comes down to. They're getting lazy. They don't want to put in the work. I think we used to always have it during homecoming week. You'd come out and your house was, it was almost like you weren't cool if your house wasn't toilet paper at some point during the week. So I think kids are just getting lazy, they're getting soft. We need a better effort out of the kids and, keep this going.
Yeah, they need a video game and then maybe they would do it. So,
yeah, that's it.
Joe says, if a hot dog is not a sandwich, then how would you classify it?
It's just a hot dog. It doesn't have to be in a family. It doesn't have to be in, a hot dog is just a hot dog. It can be in the hot dog family if you want to put it in, but it's just a, a hot dog, a brat, an Italian Polish sausage. You can put them all in the same category. They're not sandwiches. They're in a longer style bun. They're that's what they are. But I don't know that we have to classify them any further than that. A hot dog's a hot dog.
Lucy would like to know, which is the best Charlie Brown special, Christmas, Halloween, or Thanksgiving?
It's definitely Christmas. I got a real soft spot for Charlie Brown Christmas. Linus goes and gets a little tree, puts the blanket around it, it's outstanding. Somehow the tree gets decorated and looks beautiful, even though it has no leaves or any real limbs to it. But outstanding, true meaning of Christmas. I'm a huge Charlie Brown Christmas fan. I will say I've tried to watch it with my boys, and they are so bored by Charlie Brown Christmas. It's a little bit older, obviously, and they're not having it. But I'm going Christmas. I don't really think it's close.
Andrea, who we love that she's a listener of the show, says, isn't Halloween great because it is about cats?
Halloween is not about cats. It's not great because it's about cats. It's probably the worst thing. Probably the worst thing about Halloween. So not going to get any support from me here, Andrea. I think you're probably just trolling me here. I don't appreciate it. Not good.
Bob says, Coach, love the sentiment on Bitto Honey, but never got the whole candy corn thing. That's the worst candy.
Yeah, I'm not a huge candy corn fan. I wouldn't eat it outside of the Halloween season. I can tolerate a little bit of candy corn, but not a lot. I think it's one of those things that in very small doses it can be okay. It's not the worst candy. There's worse. Bitto Honey being, of course, one of those, but there's definitely worse than candy corn, but it's not great. I don't understand why people all of a sudden think, like, it becomes Halloween, we have to start eating candy corn, when nobody wants to eat it the other 11 and a half months out of the year. That makes no sense to me. But it's just part of the, Halloween's more about candy corn than it is about cats. So I'll give Bob that. At least got that going for it.
Kyle says, Coach, care to share your detailed plan for getting the most Halloween candy?
Yeah, I think for us, the first part of it is that we have the opportunity to go out two different days. So Plymouth, one of the local communities, always does trick-or-treating the Sunday before Halloween. So it'll be a different day than the rest of the communities. And then everybody else, Sheboygan will do trick-or-treating on Halloween. So our kids have the opportunity to go out twice. That's a big part of it. It's almost like having two game days. You got to be ready to go for both days. And then we're going to look to hit areas. We're going to look to go, like I said, a little bit of the older homes, so we can get a little bit smaller lots, so we get more houses per square block. It really comes down to, you don't want your kids, you don't want to be walking a ton in between houses. You don't want to be wasting that time. You want to be able to get in and out. You know, the other thing I'll say is sometimes when you go to the older areas, people aren't quite as upset about their lawn, so maybe you can cut through the lawn a little bit when you can. You got to be, you know, when you got to go back from the porch all the way to the sidewalk and walk around the lawn, it's adding time. I think ideally you want to be able to cut through some lawns, go right from porch to porch. So we're going to try to do that as best we can, but it's a big day. Hopefully the kids will get a good stretch in, and they'll be ready to go.
2 days, though, that means some serious training leading up to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to be ready. You know, you got to be ready to go. And I think you see a change, at least in Wisconsin, you see the parents are walking with the kids now, and they all have the mugs, and you're not exactly sure what's in the mugs and things like that. And it's a little bit more of a family festive atmosphere, and the parents are out talking and stuff like that. So the biggest thing for me is probably trying to keep my wife warm. You know, she does not like cold weather. So the longer we can keep her warm, the more we can stay out. You know, the boys will tough it out and they'll go door to door, but can we keep Brenda warm and ready to go?
That's awesome. We have two from Bruce. The first is, Coach, the five most annoying people in your opinion.
Whew,
that's a big list.
That's a tough. I don't know if I want to get into specific people. I don't know if I can answer this one. I will say one of the people, one of the types of people that really annoy me are the people that want to put really vague social media posts. This has been a pet peeve of mine that I've been driving for a couple of years. The people who will put a post, you know, they'll say something like, you know, so excited for the big news I just got, and that's all they're going to give you. Or they'll put like, today's been the worst day, ... And they're fishing for you to like ask them more. I don't have time for that. Like, if you really want to share the information, share the information. We want to know about the exciting news. We want to know how we can help you. But I don't need a series of posts to make this happen. So most people really annoy me. Don't be vague. Just tell us what's going on if you really want to share it. So I'm going to go with that group of people. So if you're that people, stop doing that. But I'm not going to give any specific names. That would probably get me in trouble. I would say probably if I had a name number one, though, probably my son Kanan would be number one at times, because he just doesn't shut up ever. So he can be the most annoying. We love him, but he can be annoying at times.
Bruce would also like to know who you think are the five best characters from movies.
Well, that's another one I have to give a lot of thought to. I'm not sure why. That's a tough one. I think the characters that I like are the guys who are supposed to be bad or are bad in every way, but you're rooting for them anyway. You know, I think of like the movie Goodfellas, which is a movie I really like, and you're talking about, you know, mobsters who are pretty terrible people. They're murdering people. They're doing all this bad stuff, and you end up kind of rooting for them at the end. Like, you're hoping that things go well for them. So I think some of those characters. My favorite movie of all time is probably Hoosiers. So I think, you know, Gene Hackman's character, Norman Dale, the coach in that movie, is somebody that I love. But yeah, it's a tough one. It's tough to name. There's a lot of movies out there, so to narrow it down to just five is pretty tough.
And why is it good to be a Muskie?
It's always good to be a Muskie, and we're excited about Saturday. It's another opportunity to play. You know, it's coming up. It's always good to be able to walk in the office and see that Cheese Bowl trophy from last week and know that we put ourselves in position to play more important games as we go along. So Saturday's going to be fun, and we're looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
All right, Rob. We appreciate you.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. Please have your questions to us by Tuesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.